Welcome to the Pulse Wave Podcast, podcast where we talk to the individuals that are helping change the face of GovTech today. Pulse Wave is brought to you by Metronome. We are a modern tech firm providing digital transformation services to our warfighter customer, and we always keep outcomes above ego. I'm Virgil Virgo, your host of the Pulse Wave. We have an AI ML leader, chief data scientist, Stanford PhD, coming to us from the middle of the country, Mr. Todd Morley. Thanks for coming on the Pulse Wave today. How are you doing?
I'm great, Virgil. How are you?
I'm doing really good, too. I appreciate you asking. So I'm pretty excited to have a conversation with you today. Well, we've worked together a little bit over the past few months on some pretty cool little projects that we're hoping to gain some steam on. Artificial intelligence. We're throwing around a lot lately. So it's interesting, right? You know, we're firmly in the governmental space. When you talk about new technologies many times that they haven't seen before, you know, for better or for worse, they get a little nervous, you know? So I definitely want to get to that through the conversation. But first, I'd like to talk about, you know, it's interesting, when we talked in the past, you've been in the field for 40 years at this point, I think, give or take?
30 years, including academics.
Right. I mean, really long you time. Get honest. Well, this field, you know, necessarily didn't exist in nowhere near the form it was today. Now you're a leader in the field. So how do you sort of grasp and how do you push forward in a field that, again, when you went to school, getting out, it really didn't exist? That's sort of fascinating.
So that's it's a common misconception that the field didn't exist at all. And the media use of the phrase AI in the last few years has contributed to that misperception. Artificial intelligence is a lot of syllables that mean getting machines to solve analytical problems that otherwise people would be solving with calculators or with an abacus or pencil and paper and a slide rule, but, you know, or more likely that we would be making with pure human judgment, which still happens all the time. It's not a particular computational technique, and that's how the media talks about it, and in fact, that's how a lot of Washington politicians think about it. They think about artificial intelligence these days as something that we specialists would refer to as foundation models. And the most well-known of those is ChatGPT. But before it was foundation models a few years earlier, it was deep learning, and deep learning was the rage in the public mind as the latest incarnation of artificial intelligence. There's a thing called the AI effect there's a Wikipedia article about it. The title of the article, I believe, is AI effect. Might be the AI paradox, but I think AI effect. The effect is that, well, a new kind of AI method is under development. It's considered very sexy. And people say, that's artificial intelligence. But as soon as it's reduced to software and productized, people say, that's just software.
Never mention that again. So it's interesting that you mentioned it being fancy software. So recently, someone in the DoD said, hey, you know, stop calling it AI and refer to it as advanced software, I believe. And it was almost as though you wanting to use a euphemism for it. And normally when you're using a euphemism, you're doing it because there's a bad connotation towards it, which is interesting.
I think some people want to avoid saying AI because a lot of folks find capabilities, or at least their understanding of the new capabilities, to be kind of alarming and threatening, you know, the stuff of which movies are made. So we're just going to call it software or intelligent software or expert systems or data science or mathematical model. None of those things sound nearly as threatening as artificial intelligence.
Sure, that makes sense. So sort of on that, along those lines, be fearful of AI. The Air Force came out this year and said, sort of at a high level, no generative AI.
So there's another one of those buzz phrases that people are misunderstanding because they want to apply it too narrowly to this new thing. So foundation models are, again, what people mean by the lay people mean by generative AI, but foundation models can be used in a non-generative way as well as in a generative way. They can use in a discriminative way, meaning to make decisions, to decide between alternatives, like to classify things. So if you had something on radar, if you're an Air Force type or you see something on radar, you might want some AI to look at that thing and say, is that a threat or not? Or what kind of airplane is that? Or perhaps how fast is that thing going? And what direction is it going? And those are discriminative kinds of tasks. A generative version of that would be, let's generate an artificial radar blip so we can test our software. Generative AI is a new name for an old thing in data science, which the old thing is called simulation. And so when you understand generative AI that way, there's no reason to find it threatening. You decide when you kick off the simulation. It doesn't matter what computational technique you use to simulate, you're still in charge. The more interesting question is a whole other category of new AI, and it is reinforcement learning. And reinforcement learning is where you teach the computer, so to speak, rewarding it depending on each little decision it makes. You give it some kind of reward, and gradually it learns. There's a kinds of things lead to rewards and whatnot. And the interesting distinction there is you have to define what constitutes a reward and what your long-term goal is in accruing rewards. And then the software adapts to your definition of reward, both in the short and long term. And it has a goal at that point. And the goal is to maximize the amount of long-term reward it will get on average.
What do you mean?
When you say reward,
so it's in computer software, the reward is generally just a number, right? For pigeons, when you do operant conditioning animals, it could be like a little kernel of corn. For a computer program, it's just a number. And usually the bigger the number, the more reward the computer's supposed to have understood that it has.
How are we able to reward it for something that we wouldn't know the answer for?
So let's do a little thought experiment. Suppose that I'm an investor. I'm running a hedge fund, a quantitative trading hedge fund, and they've been building AI for years. A lot of folks don't realize that that's what quantitative investing means, but it means, especially high-speed algorithmic trading, that's where, you know, every microsecond or millisecond they're buying and selling stuff on the financial markets, and it's just their computers making highly autonomous decisions. It happens already all day long. It's not, it hasn't been science fiction for years in the financial markets. Okay. So they give their computers absolute autonomy over large quantities of money. And the people that write that financial software are PhDs in applied physics and mathematics and statistics, not finance. They're pointedly not trained in finance. They're trained in math, in advanced computer science and statistics and things like that. Those are the people that have been building those algorithms for years, and they make a lot of money. I believe the most profitable hedge fund on Wall Street for years has been making twice as much money per year as the best hedge fund that is not managed in that way. So it's real. It's kind of scary, the amount of money that they entrust to the computers, and it's already happening. But they don't fear their computers in the sense that they told the computer what the reward is. You know, the reward is to maximize some function of the amount of money you make per time period. And just for sake of discussion, let's just say they tell the computer, look, just make as much money as you can on average per day. You know, that's your goal. So as long as the only decision that computer program controls is, you know, when do I buy or sell a stock or some other kind of contract? That seems innocuous, but what if I gave it the power to create a contract?
not just to buy one or sell one, but to write the contract and offer it. Suddenly, the ability to generate a contract, that kind of generative AI, coupled with the ability to buy and sell and reason a sophisticated way about what you're buying and selling and how you're timing those things, that starts to look like a military weapon.
Sure does. If used by the wrong people, yes, that could be, that's pretty frightening. So, all right, so that leads me to this question. How do you think, as a government, you can help guardrails, I guess, right?
Yep. I'm going to tell you a funny story. When I was in high school, I was kind of a science geek, but I was also a goof off and kind of a rebel. I didn't try to get good grades. I tried to maximize my fun, not my GPA. And so I was always pranking, like making things blow up in the chemistry lab like that. I took all the chem classes I could. And so by the time I got to the AP chem class, the college chem class, I already knew most of the material. It was kind of boring. So I was blowing up stuff a lot. And the teacher, I love to get her go. I love to prank her, especially. And so she gave us for our big project towards the end of the year, this experiment that we had to repeat three times. And she gave us 2 weeks to do it. And the class took the first two periods of every day. So for the first week and a half, I just slept in. I didn't even go in and pretend to do the labs because I already knew the chemistry. I had intended just to do one run very carefully and then fudge my results for the other two and sleep in for a week and a half. But she caught me by the ear 2 days before the thing was due. And she said, the other students have told me that, I haven't been taking attendance. So they told me that you haven't been here doing your labs. And I said, look, teach, everybody called her T. So look, teach, don't worry about it. I'll get the labs done on time and I'll, it'll be done right. And she said, okay, but don't expect full credit on this assignment or a good grade in my class. And at that point, she was thrown down the gauntlet, so I had to take steps. So at lunchtime that day, I snuck into her office and broke into her desk, and I found the answer key to that problem. The answer key was that the experiment was they gave us a little vial of stuff, and we had to determine what fraction of iron there was in the vial. And so I looked at my vial number and saw the correct answer, wrote it down, and got out of there. And I went home and I reverse engineered the calculations for three different experimental runs and wrote those answers as if I'd done the work and turned it in. And I made all my answers agree with each other and with the correct answer to within like a thousandth of a percent. Did it just to piss her off so she would look at the numbers and know that there was no way I was that good of a chemist at age 16. And, that it was just designed to turn her crank. And sure enough, she refused to hand back the assignment. She wouldn't give it back. She knew I cheated, but she didn't know how. She didn't catch me. Ooh. And what was she going to do? She had some power, but she had authority, but she didn't have power, right?
Sure.
She needs to keep up with AI and understand it well enough that they're going to regulate it is somewhat like asking Teach to outwit that smart ass high school kid. It's never going to happen. I mean, they can try. I've advised Congress, and a few years ago I got asked to advise a congressional committee about this stuff and I'm happy to give them my advice, but my advice is, look, if you want that bad thing not to happen in the financial markets, you need to hire some really sharp people and pay them every bit as much as they would make in industry and give them all the perks they get in industry and have them working for the folks who regulate financial markets to write AI software to see these things coming and turn off those trades before those trades get executed, to catch them as the trades are incoming. And this happens now. It doesn't happen nearly enough in government. In a related space, it's an insurance fraud. So healthcare insurance fraud is a big industry, and credit card fraud is a big industry. And companies like Visa and MasterCard and the big healthcare companies, they employ lots of people like me to build AI to see the fraud coming and stop it before it happens. And the financial markets should do that. I don't know how much they do it, but they should do it and do it well enough
that if some generative AI tries to cook up a new strategy like that, it looks so anomalous that the good AI, you know, the whatever the red team AI, you know, that it pushes the pause button on those trades and calls over the human supervisors who can't think as fast as the computer and says, hey, take a look at this. I ain't never seen this before, but it looks a little scary. Why don't we see what's going on, you know? And that's the only way you're going to defend against that kind of malfeasance. You're not going to regulate your way past it because they're not operating within the rule of law. They're not playing by the rules. They're operating within the rule of mathematics. They're doing whatever, you know, it's North Korea. They'll do whatever is mathematically possible to do. So you're not going to get it. You're not going to keep up. Only another computer is going to keep up.
I want to say even Elon Musk said last week that by the end of next year, there'll be sentience. I'm curious what you think about that. And if you could ever really even refer to a digital thing as sentient.
Sentience has been around for a long time. Again, tell me how you define sentience and I'll tell you how long it's been around. I'll give you an example. Vision is a kind of sense, right? It's one of the five senses.
Sure.
So if a computer program can see the world literally, not figuratively, literally, then to that degree, it is sentient. Video monitoring for security purposes, physical facility security, has been around for at least a decade. And as of a few years ago, when I last worked in that space, there was AI software that could notice that somebody had jumped over a fence at an airport or in a warehouse facility. It could actually infer their intention by thinking about things like, well, how fast are they walking? How furtively are they walking? What direction are they? Are they walking towards something? Is a sensitive, you know, are they trying to get in a back window? Or are they just walking past the building? That's one example. In retail theft prevention, for several years now, there have been products out there that are, they're AI cameras, they're deep learning cameras, meaning it's a really sensitive high-res camera with a computer physically on the back of it, and that computer looking at the camera. It can do things like it can read body temperature, can read your heart rate because it can see the pulse in the blood vessel near your skin. Really? It can from those things, it can infer with considerable reliability whether or not you intend to rip off target. If that's not sentience, I don't know how much more you got to have before you get to sentience.
Is perhaps maybe... Can essentially sort of say no. I guess the sentient being, you know, no, I'm not going to perform this action. I'm going to go do this, or essentially going against.
Yeah, you're talking about autonomy, not the ability to sense the world, but the ability to make decisions on its own in that way. But you and I, we don't make decisions in some highly, you know, chaotic way. I get Rocky Road ice cream because I like Rocky Road more like vanilla. And once you get to know me, if you walk me into a Baskin Robbins, you just say, watch him go. He's going to get a banana split with Rocky Road, pistachio, and pralines and cream, and he's going to put hot fudge over the whole damn thing. Just watch. And that's what my wife would say if we walked into Baskin Robbins. She would say, he doesn't need 1,500 calories, but this is what he's going to order because she knows my nature. Just like people have natures, AI programs have natures. They are defined, they're constructed in such a way that they prefer some things to others. The reinforcement learning programs, especially the ones that play chess or the ones that play other games, they're constructed so they prefer to win rather than losing. So their behavior in that sense is predictable. Self-driving cars, which are jammed full of AI, prefer to stay on the road and not crash because that's how they're constructed. And in a sense, they're very autonomous, right? They're making decisions every few microseconds. There's AI like this developing in the surgical world as well. It's all over the place. And for the most part, it's fantastic because computers don't get tired. Don't mistakes because they drank a little too much the night before, or they're getting old and senile or whatever. They just compute.
Okay, put it this way. Why not program an AI model
to be,
wildly intelligent and be able to make all decisions based in reason, no emotion, and then why not have them be all the leaders, be the governors, be the presidents, because they're not making it based on religion, sex, creed, race.
Yeah, there's a lot of colorful sci-fi around the question, why not just let the AI be in charge? But again, we can bring it back to a really narrow thought experiment to sharpen the question, which is, for example, why not let AI just fly a jet plane? Maybe not
put
a nuclear bomb on the bottom of it, but maybe put a few thousand-pound bombs on the bottom and tell us to go obliterate a certain airfield. Drop the bomb whenever it thinks is a good idea to drop the bomb. And that's the goal that you give it. And so along the way, some other aircraft in the same sortie is being flown by a human being, and that human being is operating that other aircraft in a way that the AI decides is making it too likely that the enemy will detect them both and prevent the AI from accomplishing its goal. And so it turns around and it shoots the other plane, and then it flies off alone and bombs the airport and obliterates it and flies home and gets out of the airplane expecting to have a steak dinner because it achieved its goal. Right?
Sure.
Obviously, that's not something you would want, because the problem was not the goal you gave it. The problem was you didn't give it enough constraints around that goal. You said, on the way, you cannot shoot down any friendly aircraft. Forgot to say that. The Air Force generals of the world, the thing that frightens them is their own human nature. What would be an exhaustive list of rules sufficient to guarantee benevolence?
You can't guarantee benevolence with people.
It's a very, you try to write a set of laws, right, just for driving a car. But we have these catch-all laws that say, that was unsafe operation of a vehicle, or, that was reckless driving. Well, what does reckless mean?
As you're talking, I'm just thinking, we're demanding this level for AI that we don't demand for people.
We absolutely do. Yeah. I want to suggest a way forward. I hope will tantalize whoever's listening. I think it's somewhat easier to say to the AI flying that plane, we want you to go bomb that airfield. And besides bombing that airfield, we're only going to give you a list of a very few other things that you're allowed to do. Everything else you're not allowed to do. Okay. And the interesting question is, how do you get an AI to obey orders? I think that the general idea is you limit very sharply the set of actions that it's allowed to take.
That makes a lot of sense. I appreciate this, Todd. So now we come to the parts of the podcast. Is the most exciting few minutes of all of podcasting. This is where we do the pulse check, Todd. The pulse check is where I ask you three questions and you answer those three questions in the form of a song title. So let's get rocking here, Todd. So how do you feel when an organization wants to incorporate AI with no data science strategy?
My stomach's flipping while your budget's slipping. There's a country.
Wild man.
Ready?
Yeah, sing that song.
I made it up. I thought I was supposed to make it up.
Well, by Todd Morley. Nice. We're going to learn. How do you feel when an organization embraces AI and other new technologies to stay competitive?
This one will be a real country song. I was country when country wasn't cool, but I would adapt it. I was data science when data science wasn't cool, meaning sign me up. I'm there.
I love it. Last and final. How do you feel when your AI initiatives contribute to bottom line growth, success, et cetera?
Here's a Huey Lewis and the News song. Refrain is, I'm taking what they're given because I'm working for a living. Data science, one of the things I like about data science is that when it works at all, the ROI is usually several orders of magnitude, meaning you pump $1 million into my project, if the project works at all, you might get $100 million back.
that's kind of the norm with data science. Projects can be somewhat risky depending on kind of project, but the ROIs are huge, and I love that. And so as a practicing data science, I expect that my work is going to produce a very handsome ROI. And if it's not doing that, then I'm not doing my job.
That makes a lot of sense. Well, Todd Morley, AI ML leader, thank you so much for coming on the Pulse Wave. And to quote you as we go out here, long-term happiness over short-term pleasure.
There you go.
Been a lot of fun. Thank you for having me, Virgil.
Be honest, thank you for coming on. I hope you have a great day, sir. Take care.
Bye-bye.